Our scripture reading for this morning comes from the 9th chapter of the Gospel according to Mark, beginning with verse 30. And they went on from there and passed through Galilee. He did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him. And 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another who was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them. And taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." In another setting, as I continue to do today, I would make visits to nursing homes, and there was one particular nursing home that was in an old Victorian house that had been renovated into a nursing home, a big, big old house with many rooms, and an addition had been built on it. And when you walked into the lobby, you could imagine that it would have been at one time perhaps had tall potted plants and would have had fancy wallpaper and chestnut woodwork and all that, but it was all painted and rather nondescript. And there was a niche off to one side. And in the niche was an almost life-sized plaster figure of an angel. And it really seemed kind of out of place there, but at the same time I thought, well, okay, it's a nursing home, an angel, you know, maybe they just decided to keep it there. Chances are they probably just left it there because it was too big to move. And there it was. Well, one day when I went in, I noticed that somebody had taken a walker. And the angel had one hand down like this, and the other hand up like that, like it was gesturing, like an angel of the Annunciation or something. And the person had placed the walker so that it was right, it was in front of the angel, right under the angel's hand, as if the angel were using the walker. And obviously I had no idea who had done that. And they had just left it there. And the next time I was there, it was still there. This is before the days of digital cameras, so I didn't have a picture, but I still have a picture in my mind of it. It was a wonderful thing. It made me think about vulnerability. In particular, the vulnerability of the divine, if we think of an angel, as they appear in the scriptures as representatives of God. Obviously, one of the patients thought that the angel needed some help. And perhaps he did. Vulnerability is very much at the heart of this passage in which we find Jesus talking with his disciples. This is right after the transfiguration on the mountain when the disciples, three of them in particular, James, John, and Peter, have this vision of Jesus with his clothes incredibly white and his face is white, and they hear a voice saying, "This is my son, listen to him." And then they have this, at least Peter has a strong urge to just stay up there. Let's just stay up here. This is such a great feeling. Let's stay here and we'll build a shelter for all of us, and it'll be great. Good times. But Jesus says, no, we have to go down. So the vision disappears. They come down. And then they're on the road again, which they did an awful lot of, it seems. And it's very clear that Jesus and the disciples never had anything other than their own feet to carry them from one place to another. So you can imagine that they had a lot of time to talk. And I can imagine that a lot of the teaching that Jesus did with his disciples was in the form of conversation, just on the road. I mean, if some of you walk, you know how long it takes to walk from one place to another, and if you're with another person, you talk. Or if you're by yourself, you have those little plugs that look like a bent cigarette stuck in your ear. Anybody have those? No, I don't. Today, we're often in a rush when we're going somewhere. The distance between here and there seems so great that we just wanted to get it over. But in the ancient world, that wasn't an option. You had to walk, unless you were wealthy enough to have an animal to ride. And of course, that is always exacerbated if you're flying with that annoying person sitting next to you in the plane who just simply will not shut up if you want to read. We've all had that. So travel. Being on a journey, even a short one, was an opportunity for conversation, to talk, to learn, to work things out. So when they get to Capernaum, and there's an interesting little tidbit here that may not jump out at first. When they get to Capernaum and they were in the house, some scholars have suggested that perhaps Jesus had a house in Capernaum. It's possible. It's clear, especially in Mark's gospel, that Capernaum was a base of operation for Jesus in Galilee. We don't know, but it's possible. And as they're talking, he asks himself. After they were talking about his impending death and his resurrection. And he says, what were you talking about? But they didn't say anything because they were arguing about who was the greatest. Friends, if you want to look for a source for the divisions in the Christian church, this is where it starts. It starts with the disciples. Which one is the greatest? Jesus' response is, look, whoever's going to be the greatest is going to be the last. And there happens to be a child present. And he brings the child close to him and says, whoever welcomes one such child welcomes me, but not only me, the one who sent me. This is another reflection of what we see almost constantly in the Gospels. When Jesus tells us that the way that we see reality is the opposite of how God sees reality. And so we, someone who is wealthy and powerful and influential, and in God's eyes that person is weak. And the one who is weak in our eyes is strong in God's eyes. And Paul picks this up as he talks about the nature of power. What we consider to be powerful in this world is weak in God's eyes. That doesn't make it bad, but it makes it weak. If you want to be the greatest of all, you have to make yourself the least and become the servant of everyone. Now, there are a couple ways to read this, especially with the bit about the child. One way to read Jesus' example of bringing a child before him and saying that they need to become like the child is that he's literally talking about children. Now, we know that it's obvious that Jesus loved children. He advocated on their behalf. And it is clear that we should welcome children and value all children as Jesus did. Even though the world often at times does not value children, we should, no matter whose children they are and no matter where they are and how much money their parents have or don't have. We should value all children. So that's one possibility. Jesus is talking about literal children. There's another possibility, and I think this is actually closer to what Jesus had in mind, that he was not just talking about children as being valued and loved. Notice when Jesus takes the child, he says, whoever welcomes one such child, and you can read this both ways, welcomes me, and not only me, but the one who sent me. He might also be talking about disciples. It's clear that Jesus used the word children to refer to his disciples. There are places where he addresses them as children. Now, that's not a demeaning way of addressing them. For him, it is not. It's simply perhaps a term of endearment, but also a way of designating them as disciples. So it's possible that what Jesus is saying here, and we can almost see it both ways perhaps, is thinking about Jesus' disciples and how it is not up to us to decide who is Jesus' disciples. And here we get to really the heart of the matter. Much of what the church argues about today is who can be a disciple of Jesus. And we all know that. There are branches of the church that are very clear about who can or cannot be a disciple. If a person is in the LGBT spectrum and does not fit somebody's idea of what human sexuality should be, well, they can't be a disciple. Personal color, they can't be a disciple. Don't have a lot of money, no. And some churches are very clear about that, and that's unfortunate. But this is one of the things that Jesus would argue against. It's not up to you or me to decide who is a disciple of Jesus. Because, friends, if we look at the whole spectrum of the Christian church, people who consider them disciples of Jesus, there are a lot of things that are different. There is a lot that is in common, too. And that's what we should focus on. There is a lot that is in common. We shouldn't focus on the differences, but what's in common. Discipleship, as Jesus is defining it, is not about who's in charge, who makes decisions, who gets their own way most of the time. Because that's what the disciples are seeing it as. Who's the greatest? Who knows the most? Who has the best ideas? Who is the one that everybody follows when Jesus isn't around? And it's clear that there were many times when Jesus was not with the disciples. They were off on their own. But he brings them back around. This is what discipleship is about. Discipleship is about being last. It is about serving others. It is not about control. It is about service. friends, the church can very, very easily be seduced into thinking that discipleship and being a part of the church is about power. And our world today is no different than the world of Jesus' time. There is no difference in terms of how the powerful are viewed. Who is most powerful? Those who have the most money? Those with the most influence? Those who are able to do more? And who is left out? The vulnerable. The vulnerable in society. We live in a world in which competition is the way that things happen. And on the surface, that's fine. If you're talking about a store, one store that builds a new store next to another, and they have their prices 5% lower so they can attract more customers, that's just business competition. We're not talking about that. We're talking about people being left behind because they're seen as valueless. And Jesus does not want us to see vulnerable people as having no value. That's why he brings that child out. Whether he's talking literally about children or he's talking about those who humble themselves to become his disciples. People who are vulnerable in society should not be seen as having no value. That he's very clear about. Friends, around the world, the people who are most valuable, or most vulnerable, I should say, are usually women and children. Yes, there are certainly men who live in poverty, but more often than not, it's women and children who find themselves in poverty. They are the most vulnerable in society. And just as soon as we think that we have gotten the world to the place where everybody is treated well, then something happens, where somebody opens their mouth, or whatever, and we realize that there is still so much work to be done to protect those who are vulnerable in our society. So let's think for just a moment about this image of a child. Because there is certainly a lot that we can learn. There are a couple things about children in particular that can inform the way that we look at discipleship. One is wonder. Probably every one of us has seen a child that at one time or another who expressed amazement at something that was so incredibly simple. Have you ever seen a small child look at a flower and their reaction is something along the lines of, wow. Have you ever seen that? Or something else in nature that is so simple, a butterfly. That's beautiful. Or something else. Not all adults lose that sense of wonder, but I think a lot of adults do. And we will often walk by those very things that a small child will look at and react as if it's the most fantastic thing that they have ever seen in their lives up to that point. And we just walk or drive by. Well, we have things on our mind. We all know that. As disciples, Jesus would have us to regain that sense of wonder. To be able to see the beautiful in something that is small and insignificant, whether it is a work of God in nature or whether it is something that another person does, or something about another person to regain that sense of wonder is a marvelous thing. To be able to look at something simple and see the artistry of God in it. There's something else about children that we can learn about as disciples, and that is vulnerability. There are good ways to be vulnerable, and there are not good ways to be vulnerable, or dangerous ways perhaps. Children obviously are vulnerable to predators, and we have to make sure that that does not happen. And so we have things in place here. Our preschool downstairs has policies in place to make sure that children who are vulnerable are not victimized. And in our society, although sometimes measures may seem to be overboard, they are intended to keep children safe. And in today's world, that has to happen. It's unfortunate, but it has to happen because children are vulnerable. But the good kind of vulnerability is when a child feels free to show compassion or love. Not all children, but many children feel free to offer their love and compassion to somebody, especially if they feel as though somebody is upset or that they feel bad. And it's often difficult for us to get out of our shell and to offer that same kind of compassion. I heard somebody once talk about New Englanders, and this is from a person who's not from New England, refer to us as God's frozen people. It was a Methodist bishop, too. I mean, come on. But, you know, there is a little bit of truth to that. Now, sometimes we are just a little bit hesitant to take that step and to ask, are you okay? Can I help with something? But children are often freer to do that, aren't they? They will often express concern or love. They will give someone a hug. They will do something to express that compassion. What Jesus calls us to do is to have both of these qualities, the quality of wonder, as we consider God. God is not just a figure in the sky that we can manipulate with our prayers. As we consider the wonder of God, there is much to marvel at. Be open to that wonder. Take a look at a flower sometime soon and look at it as if it is the most beautiful thing you have ever seen in your life. It will change your day. And vulnerability, being open to others. Not to see people as just nuisances, although sometimes some people are nuisances, but to be open to someone who may need an expression of care and concern. To be disciples, the qualities of children that we need to have are to have that capacity for wonder and the capacity for being vulnerable to care for somebody. There's one other element, and that is an element of potential. Every time I baptize a child, and I can't tell you how many children I baptized, I have no idea. A lot. As I hold that child, I think, what is this child going to become? What are they going to do with their lives? Are they going to just live a quiet life, raise a family, be a good person, be active in their community? is this child going to make a momentous discovery as an adult that is going to change people's lives? Or is this child going to fall into a situation where they don't reach their potential and they are abused and neglected? All those things go through my mind. And unfortunately, many children in our world do not reach their potential for a variety of reasons. Friends, the kind of vulnerability that God would have us to show is a vulnerability that is filled with concern and love for one another. To have that vulnerability and wonder of a child is really the first step in being a disciple of Jesus. Amen.